This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Welcome to the podcast that takes a light-hearted look at lesser-known London stories with your own personal blue badge professional tourist guides.
She's Fiona.
And she's Alex.
And this is the Ladies Who London podcast.
Hello! Hello! Welcome to Ladies Who London.
Hello! It's Alex here. I've lost my voice.
So this is a step up from last week, because last week was mostly me talking to Midge.
Two weeks ago.
Now we've got Alex.
You only got part of me.
So in a month's time, we might have the whole combo.
If we're lucky, we'll see. It's my own fault. Having not had any fun all year, I went out down to Bognor Regis this weekend, just gone, where there's a folk festival every year, and my ukulele group play, do a couple of performances there. And it's so much fun. We're not a London-based ukulele group. We met all online over Zoom during the pandemic. And so we don't really get together that often. It's a couple of times a year. But we have so much fun and it's so much joy that we keep getting asked to perform at places. And we all turn up and we haven't rehearsed and it's great fun and it's complete chaos and we love it. But I basically sang myself hoarse.
I was going to say the ukulele, famously tough on the voice, but I'm guessing you're singing along.
Well, yeah, we're singing along as well. And I just had so much fun that we did two performances on the Saturday, and then we have a picnic at one of our friends' houses who lives in the area. So we all go there and we play for like 4 or 5 hours and sing and have a little kind of mini open mic, and it's so much fun. But even at the end of that one day, I was like, oh, this is not going well. And the second day I was partly hoarse and I thought, bugger it. And we did another performance, and then I banged out before the fourth one and I just have no voice. So yeah.
But in a good cause,
and it's honestly one of the highlights of my life. I know people think it's really nerdy playing the uke or whatever, but it brings me so much joy. And this group of people I've met are just the absolute best.
Wasn't it them that you were meeting? I've seen the photo you put on social media at some point of kind of like running towards people. I think it might have been the first time you met in the flesh.
It was such a joyous photo.
It was just like, yay!
Yeah. It was in Wales last year. And it's so wonderful. There's such a great group of people, and they're literally all over the world. We've got some German people, some Canadians, quite a few Americans, even an Aussie or two. The bulk of the group are Brits, but we have people from all over. So occasionally one or two of them will pop up at one of these things. And it's just so joyous and lovely. And they're such great. We're all so completely different and very different ages and very different backgrounds. And, you know, we're all nuts, and it's wonderful.
And so do you meet still on Zoom?
It still happens every night. The Zoom is still on every night. It's on every night during the pandemic, and it's still on every night. A different person hosts it every night. It's not quite as, I mean, at the peak, there were like 50 or 60 people on during COVID, or sometimes even more. I think one night we reached about 100. And we'd often nuke into the small hours, like 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And now it's still on every night, but there's usually, it depends on the night, but between sort of 5 to 15 people. So we don't do it as regularly, but you know, we're all still
it's so lovely.
We're called the pandemic pluckers, it's so great.
That seems a perfect example of the good things of lockdown, as it were.
100%. And also the good things about now being out of it and being able to meet up. It's just wonderful.
And I do, every now and then I meet people. I met someone this weekend who said, oh yes, I watched your virtual tour series and things. And it's so lovely. That again is a similar sort of community who are there.
It's so nice. So there's a lot of good that came out of the pandemic, even if it was utterly rubbish. But anyway, how are you, Fiona?
I'm good. Well, I'm recovering from a cold and cough, which is less good and less helpful when you're guiding and things. But I managed to just kind of get rid of a couple of jobs, and so I wasn't didn't end up as hoarse as you.
Very wise.
And I don't know, I know there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel on the building works and things.
Good,
so that's always kind of reassuring.
That's
and
good.
Just, I mean, the sun is out again.
I know.
A few days ago, it felt like that's the end. Okay, that's the end of summer. But now it's suddenly got super warm again. I mean, the sun's out. It's all joyous.
Yeah, but every year, us Brits, we say that, don't we? We get, you know, we have a slightly rubbish August because August is always a bit rubbish. And we go, oh, that's it. Oh, that wasn't much of a summer. And then it comes back in September because it always does. Because I always say to people, September and the start of October are the loveliest times. And everyone's like, oh, well, I wasn't expecting that. And I'm like, why not? It's happened for the last 15 years.
We love to be delighted by, oh, what's happened? Oh, goodness.
I know. It's great. But I'm also loving that there is a bit of a chill in the air in the evenings. And that makes me really happy. Because
that little crispness first thing in the morning as well.
Yeah. I love autumn. It's my favourite season.
And it's just that little bit. I mean, there's still lots of visitors. It's still busy in London, but it's that little bit quieter. So it's just time to kind of go, oh, okay, now I've actually got enough energy to enjoy doing these.
I haven't got any energy at all. It's funny because I'm still, I keep thinking, my energy's definitely got a lot better in the last few weeks since I finished chemo, but I keep thinking I'm fine. And then I go and overdo it, like this weekend where Saturday was so wonderful. So I went, it was down in Bognor. So I had a sausage sandwich for breakfast. I had an hour long swim in the sea, which was cold and gorgeous.
Oh.
Then we did two performances and the whole picnic. And I mean, that for me, that's the most I've done all year. And then Sunday I could have slept all day, but I was like, no, we've got another performance. And so I've been a little bit broken ever since. And I keep forgetting that my energy levels aren't quite where they used to be.
So I'm still
it's Tuesday and I'm still a bit broken from the exhausted. So I had to cancel a thing last night and so I just need to be a bit more gentle with myself.
Build in a little bit of recovery. Now I was just wondering whether I was gonna say there was a little exchange that you and I had on WhatsApp where you said Bognor and I said bloody Bognor and you said bugger Bognor.
Bugger Bognor.
It would make no sense to most people, but there was a logic for it. I'm trying to think, was it Oscar Wilde?
It was George the Third, wasn't it?
Oh, George, yes, someone like that. That makes more sense.
We should really have looked up this story
before I started talking about it.
But actually, I mean, I think it's now sort of been discredited. But I'm just going to have a little woman Googles thing on podcast.
Well, while you're doing that, I think what I can fill in with what distracts me. Didn't Oscar Wilde, when he was on his deathbed, he was staying somewhere not particularly glamorous.
In Paris, wasn't it?
Paris. So maybe it's not even him. Maybe this is someone else. But somebody said, like, either the wallpaper goes or I do.
That was supposed to be his last words. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I found it. The bugger bugger is actually George V. So uh-huh. I've got a bit confused. The pervasive rumour holds that after being told he could recuperate in the seaside town of Bognor Regis, the king's last words were bugger Bognor. But although in a private journal, the king's physician wrote that his last words were God damn you. But actually, so a little bit of history that I learned this weekend whilst in Bognor Regis. So the name, I've never really thought about it, but the name Regis, of course,
Regis.
Is linked to the regent, because it was a place that the Prince Regent used to go an awful lot. And well, apparently, so I was staying in a little place called Pagham, which is a little village that's kind of now been co-opted into Bognor Regis, but it's sort of its own thing. Apparently, that's where he used to say it was Pagham, and Bognor Regis just went, oh, Pagham was part of us and stole the Regis.
We're having the Regis.
Yeah. So it should be Pagham Regis, but actually it's Bognor Regis. So anyway, thieving devils.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was wonderful. And I've only been to Bognor twice, this year and last year, for the folk festival. And both times the weather has been gorgeous. And I'm completely convinced that it is always like that there.
So, oh, obviously.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's where I'm going to be moving.
Lovely.
Yeah. Right. Well, before we get on, any parish notices?
Well, as ever, we're edging our way towards being efficient and good.
And
it's a long, long way for us to travel. But there have been lots of lovely messages on Instagram and various places from you know, after last week, people going, yay,
thank
you're
you,
back.
Gang.
And it's really lovely and heartening and to feel very welcomed back.
Thank you.
So thank you for everyone who sent in.
We may not have responded to everything because, as you can tell, we're still completely, you know, crazy mad with stuff, but reassured we read everything, even if we don't quite get around to answering it. So thank you very, very much.
Yeah, and that's the problem. It's easier to read it. You read it and go, oh, I'll come back to that later when I've got more time.
Yeah.
And then that time doesn't.
And then 6 months later, you end up going, oh, hey, oh. So.
Yes.
So
this week is a surprise for me because I think I'm going to
do it with the little voice I have. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't know what it is yet.
Obviously, we haven't done one for a while because we were away. But then you did one with Midge last time, and I think just before we left it, I think I owed everyone an episode. So I was trying to decide what to do for this week's one, and I had, as usual, I've got a massive list of stuff. And looking through it, I was like, I can't make a decision. And then I happened to be leafing through a book the other day, and there was a little story that popped out at me, which was a story I already knew. But again, like most of these things, I knew the bones of it. And I thought, actually, I can go back and find the flesh. So that's what I've done. And it is concerning one particular man and one particular very famous building in London.
Uh-huh.
And that building is Buckingham Palace.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to tell you who it is yet because I want to see if you. I'm sure this is a story you know, Fiona. Again,
so at some point, can I put my hand up and go, Miss, I know, Miss.
Of course you can, but I don't want to do it straight away. So we're going back to 1838. If you cast your minds back, so we're talking the Victorian era, and it's not just the Victorian era that is the centre of this story. It's Victoria herself, Queen Vic. She's on the throne, and she is the subject of this story. She's not the. Well, let me just tell you the story and we'll go for that. So in 1838, it was the break of dawn, and there was one of the porters at Buckingham Palace sitting in his little office, and he saw what he took to be the ghostly face of a young boy at the window of his office. And he looked up and he saw it, and he was a bit scared to start with, and then he thought, oh, and he looked away, and when he looked back at the window, the face had gone. Oh. And he went, well, I'm pretty sure that's a ghost. It's a figment of my imagination. He said, but just to be on the safe side, I'm going to alert the security staff, and they can just take a look in case I'm not imagining things. And so he took all the security staff, and they set off around the palace looking for this young boy. And it turned out it wasn't a ghost. It was actually a little boy of 14 years of age,
uh-huh.
although he looked a bit younger. He was quite small for his age, so he looked about 11 or 12. And the security staff, to start with, only found these sort of dark, greasy marks all over the palace, fingerprints and like streaks on walls and all sorts of stuff. And then all of a sudden, they spot this young boy. He's all covered in dark grease and soot, uh-huh. and they leapt for him. And he was so greasy, he wiggled out of their grasp. Ran through a couple of the corridors. They followed him. They chased him down. He legged it into a room and out of an open window and started pegging it across the lawn.
Okay, yeah.
The security descend on him and they eventually catch him. And his name is Edward, but he goes by a very different name. He is the first, I guess we could sort of say the first royal stalker, uh-huh. and a massive headache for the royal family. Do you know the name that he normally goes by, or the press had him go by?
I'm not sure that I do.
Don't tell me you don't know the story.
I don't think I do.
This is the story of the boy Jones.
Oh,
surely
no.
You know the boy
Jones. I don't know the boy Jones.
Really? This is one of my big stories when I'm doing sightseeing. Oh my goodness. Okay. So they catch him. They take him to the kitchens. And at first glance, they think he's a chimney sweep because he's really small. But he's also dirty. He's covered in black soot and other stuff as well.
Yeah.
Turns out he wasn't a chimney sweep at all, but he just never washed. And so he was absolutely filthy. And the greasy stuff he's covered in appears to be a thing called bear's grease. Now, whether or not it's actually grease or fat from a bear, I don't know. But it was sold as a slightly quack remedy for hair loss.
Okay.
And what he'd done is he'd found it in one of the bedrooms in the palace, and for some reason, best known to himself, smeared himself in it, whatever. And so they're kind of thinking, how has this 14-year-old boy appeared in the palace? This is Buckingham Palace, after all.
Yeah.
And they suddenly realised that he was wearing some trousers, but they were quite bulky, and the front of it was really quite bulky. And I'm not being, you know, rude about anything here.
No.
But they said, you know, what's happening here? What's going on? He unzips his trousers and out falls a couple of pairs of the Queen's knickers.
Ooh.
Now, it seems that he's taken a few things. He's taken, obviously, a couple of pairs of the Queen's underpants.
Yes.
He's taken a couple of pairs of trousers, some inkstands, and a sword as well. Okay. You know, just for good measure.
Also, down his trousers, the sword.
Yeah, I think the sword was actually, he'd moved it into another room, possibly to come back for it or whatever. Okay. Who knows?
Okay, yeah.
But he doesn't seem dangerous. He hasn't got a weapon. And, you know, he's not really stealing anything of major import. I mean, well, I suppose the Queen's undercrackers, I guess, are slightly important. Nice. But they're not, you know, monetarily, not so much.
Yeah.
So he's taken to the police station over at Bow Street. And this is all a bit, you know, embarrassing for the palace, really. But the papers got hold of it. And he's brought up on a charge. And it seems that he hasn't just popped into the palace. He has gone into the palace and been in there for some time. Now, this is something that comes up again and again. He keeps breaking into Buckingham Palace. We know on about 4 occasions, but probably many, many more that we're not aware of.
Right.
So he's taken to the police station and this court case, all this sort of hearing happens, and it gets in the papers. And there's a report in the Evening Standard. It says the chairman said they did not. The calendar did not contain any charge which called for particular observation. He wished, however, to make one remark on the case of the boy Jones, who was indicted for stealing certain articles in Buckingham Palace. And that remark was that the fact of robbery being committed in a royal palace did not at all differ from or alter the offence of robbery in a private dwelling house.
Mm-hmm.
And the court therefore trusted, when the trial came on, that no unnecessary questions would be put to witnesses. So basically they're saying, don't embarrass the royals.
Yes.
Is what they're saying.
Yeah.
So, but they have this court case.
At the same time, they're saying it's just like any other house.
They are, but they're also saying, look, you know, let's start asking questions about the Queen's underwear.
Yes.
And let's not, you know, because, you know, the papers would be quite interested to find out all little details about this and the other. So let's not ask any questions that might possibly give away, you know, some royal secrets or whatever.
Yes. That makes
now,
sense.
In this court case, it's all very odd. You know, everyone's quite like, how did he get in? He's a young boy. What's he doing? Why is he there? And when they ask him, he just says, oh, I got in through a window. That's all he says. He's like, not really.
Yeah.
You know, why are you there? And he hasn't really got any good reasons for being there. He just wants to. He said he just wanted to see Buckingham Palace. That's all he wants to do. He wants to see Buckingham Palace and overhear some of the conversations that the Queen was having. That was it. He's defended by a man called Mr. Prendergast, who randomly just sort of pops up and says, oh, you know, gosh, this is a bit of fun, isn't it? Isn't this hilarious? Ha, ha, ha. Well, clearly he's just a little young scamp having a bit of jolly fun and, you know, no harm done, no harm, no foul.
Mm-hmm.
And the jury agrees. The jury's like, yeah, bit of a lol, isn't it? And they acquit the boy Jones.
Okay.
And Miss Prendergast literally says, the jury says they acquit on the grounds that his entering into the palace was but a freak of youthful folly and not for any felonious purpose.
Huh.
So there we go.
Okay.
Not guilty. Walked free.
Ah.
The end of the story.
Or was it?
It's just the beginning.
Yeah.
So he seems to start this obsession with Queen Victoria. And I say particularly, Queen Victoria. It's sort of Queen Victoria / Buckingham Palace. He never targets her anywhere else other than Buckingham Palace.
Right.
He doesn't tart off to Windsor or go up to Scotland or follow her or anything else. Now, you know, so he it's not that he's necessarily obsessed with her, but possibly the palace. And the next time he is arrested is 2 years later. Now, the chances are that he has been popping into Buckingham Palace very merrily for quite some time.
Yeah.
And the reason I think this is because of how long it takes them to discover him when they do discover him.
Right.
So we go forward to the 30th of November of 1840. Now, this is quite an interesting time. Queen Victoria has given birth to her first child, Victoria, only 9 days before.
Right.
And it's about 3 or 4 months after the very first assassination attempt on Queen Victoria.
Right.
There's 8 in total over her lifetime, but the very first happens when she's about 5 or 6 months pregnant. So security should have been a little bit higher.
Should be tighter, yeah.
Should be tighter. And on this day, now he doesn't get caught on this day, but we find out about it later. He pops into the palace, just like, oh, there we go. Pops in through a window, thinks it's maybe a bit unsafe to stay, and he leaves again. But he comes back on the 1st of December, so just 2 days later.
Yeah.
And he comes in on a Tuesday evening around 8 or 9 o'clock. And he's not discovered until the Thursday morning. So this little cheeky, soot-laden chap has just been tarting around in Buckingham Palace for a day and a half.
Yeah.
Now, he's discovered.
How do we know? So he said he arrived on the Tuesday. Presumably, that's how we know he was there on the Tuesday.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's possible he might be fibbing. But what? Well, I mean, what
no.
Would be
well,
the
yes, no. I mean, okay. So he's very when he's caught, he's very honest about where he's been and what he's done.
Okay.
And then they go back and they look, and then they find like dirty fingerprint marks everywhere he says he's been.
Right.
So it's like, oh yeah, then I went there. And they're like, oh yeah, you did. And then I went there. Yeah. Oh yeah, you were there as well. It's hilarious. So on this particular occasion, on the Thursday, Queen Victoria is sleeping in a room with her baby or baby nearby, whatever. And about two rooms away, one of her nursemaids hears a noise coming from the Queen's dressing room. And so she goes up to the door, she knocks on it, she opens it, and she says, who's there? Is anyone there? And there's nobody, you know, nobody says anything. So she gets one of the pages very, very sensibly and says, you know, I think someone's in there. The page comes in into the room and they find, he goes underneath this sofa and he drags out this dirt-covered little boy. Well, I say little boy, he's 16 now. He's still quite small. He was always quite small.
Okay.
I sort of drag him out. She says, it's a bit of a horror, you know, he's sort of this like little urchin is dragged out from under this sofa. The Queen is not aware. She's still sleeping merrily a couple of rooms away. And it is thought, and he is questioned later about this, that he might, because this is in the dressing room, that he might have been peeking on the Queen while she was getting dressed as well.
Ooh.
I know.
Yes.
So they take him back to Bow Street and he's questioned. And he's quite cheeky when he's being questioned about what he's done. He seems like he's had some serious fun. They say, how'd you get in? He says, well, I came down Constitution Hill. There's an open window, so in I hopped. And they later find that there's a little window that's been broken, so he might have broken it, but whatever, either way.
Yeah, okay.
He says, I came in. I slept underneath one of the servants' beds on the Wednesday. I went to the kitchen. I had some food. I had some soup. And they find there's pots of soup stock in the, well, wherever in the kitchen somewhere. And he's got like dirty finger marks all over it. So he helped himself some dinner. He found a throne. At some point, had a little sit on it, you know, nice.
As you would.
And they said to him, like, did nobody see you? You've been tarting around here for a day and a half. And he said, oh, yeah, I saw people, but I just hide behind a pillar or behind a piece of furniture and I never got spotted. So, you know, and they do say, like, did you see the Queen? And he sort of, like, grins. He doesn't say anything, but he's, like, sort of grinning a bit wryly. So they think he might have been having a little peek and all of this. And they worry that he's out to hurt the Queen. But he says no, and he doesn't have a weapon on him, and he hasn't done anything to her. He's been pretty much in her presence. There's even some evidence that he might have been hiding under furniture while she's been having meetings with people and listening to her chat. Because he does actually say, at one point they ask him, and say, look, you know, why are you going in there? And he says, well, I wanted to listen to conversations between Queen Victoria and Albert, and then I want to write a book.
Okay.
I mean, cool, crack on.
So this is like sort of, you know, not investigative journalism, but you know.
I mean, well, sort of phone sort hacking.
Exactly that. It's listening in.
It's very funny. Yeah. But he's sort of just, you know, he's not like charging out there and writing a bestseller. He's just listening in. He's just intrigued, really. It's like, you know, more than anything. Now, they did actually say to the Queen, look, this is what's happened and we're worried he's out to hurt you. And she said, well, I don't feel he's a danger either. She said, I mean, if he'd come into my room, I might have been really, really frightened. But she said, but he hasn't got weapons. He's clearly been close to me and hasn't done anything. So I don't think it's a danger either. And they decide to keep it under wraps as much as possible. So they do a hearing in private by the Privy Council and they interrogate all the domestics as well to see if they've, you know, because of course, obviously you're going to go straight to the lower rungs and be like, you were in on this, whatever. And there's all sorts of talk, you know, they say, well, it's really hard to know how he keeps getting in or how he keeps getting missed because there's loads of, you know, workmen, there's like painters and plasterers and decorators and all this sort of stuff coming in and out the whole time. So they're like, you know, how do we know that one of them didn't bring him in or we hid with them or something, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So, and they bring his father into it too. They bring him to the hearing and he says, my son is not of sound mind. He's not, his dad doesn't really seem to kind of invest in him too much, but he definitely seems to be a bit frustrated by all of this. He thinks it's, you know, it seems to be a real imposition on him. And because this kid is still only 16, I mean, admittedly, back in the Victorian era, you know, you didn't have the
16 is
still kind of adult, really. But yeah. You know, when he's supposedly not of sound mind, in quotes, they're going to sort of say, well, he's your responsibility. So yeah. The dad is sort of being told, well, you know, keep an eye on him. And he's a bit peeved with this. And they even bring in that most scientific of all scientists, the phrenologists.
The phrenologists. Very dependable, reliable, very always right.
They come in, they do a bit of a feel of his head and all of that malarkey. And they say, they can conclude with each other that he has a, quote, most peculiar formation, but they don't say that whether he's mad or not. They don't know anything about. But the guy's perfectly lucid. He's not, you know, ranting and raving. He's completely lucid. And he couldn't be made to seem mad. So he wasn't going to be put in bedlam or anything like that. I mean, admittedly, if he was a woman, probably would have been, but still. Mm. But they can't, there's nothing that they can pin on him and say, yeah, he's bonkers and we've got to lock him up. So he goes to a normal court case, well, through this sort of private one, and he's sentenced to 3 months incarceration. Now,
okay.
The House of Correction that he is incarcerated in, and I didn't know there was one here, very interesting, was on Tothill Street. Now, Tothill Street is tantalisingly close to the palace for my money.
Yeah, absolutely.
If anyone doesn't know where, not Tothill Street, if you don't have as much of a forensic knowledge of London as these two nerdy guides, any guide in London will know that is where there is some of the only coach parking in London. It's a street that runs away from Westminster Abbey towards Buckingham Palace, and it's one street back, basically one or two streets back from St James's Park. So, you know, from Tothill Street, it's at best a 10-minute walk to Buckingham Palace. So, tantalisingly close for 3 years. And while he was in there, they were the lawmakers were going to have a little consultation amongst themselves onto whether or not they could charge him with hiding in the palace to commit a felony. And given that he's got no weapons and they, apart from the first time, don't really find him stealing anything, it's a tough charge. So they haven't really got anything for that.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
In the meantime, the palace goes, right, okay, gang, security needs upping. So they instigate a 24-hour watch of 14 constables situated around the palace, okay?
Yeah.
So 3 months. Oh, go on. You have a question.
Yeah. So they do that, like, while he's still in the jail.
While he's still in the jail, yeah. They go, okay.
Yeah.
We've had two big sort of red flags of this. So.
Yes. Yes. You think in a way, like, you know that he's not going to break in while he's still in jail. So the point when you need it in place is when he comes out of jail, surely. But
well,
yeah.
Yes. But
it makes sense.
But
there may be others.
Yes, exactly. And it's making headlines and people are starting to get really intrigued by the story. And they are very worried about kind of copycat people doing that and going, hey, if he could do it.
If it's that easy, I'm going to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So these 3 months passes. Jones is released and he's sent into the custody of his father, who isn't best pleased about it all, but hey-ho. And a couple of weeks after he's released, he's due to come back to the court. Now, I can't exactly fathom why, but I think it was that they were thinking about sending him away to sea and they couldn't quite get him to agree. So they wanted to get him back into the court to finalise some kind of plan. I'm not quite sure, but anyway, he was due to kind of go back to the court for a bit of a, I don't know, a post-incarceration. With his father, and just as he's to do so, he disappears again. And he's decided that another trip to the palace is in order. So,
where better to hide? We know we can hide there.
Now,
yes.
He manages to break in despite these 14 constables, goes back to the kitchens, helps himself to dinner. We know this because when he's found, he's wrapped up a whole heap of meat and potatoes in a hanky and he's busy tucking into it on the stairs. He goes to the library, has a good leaf through there. Apparently, he finds some crown and some jewels, tries them on for size. And then just after 1 a.m, one of the constables is going through an area called the Marble Hall. And, of course, you know, lighting wasn't what it is now. So there are lots of little dark corridors and dark, you know, niches. And he suddenly sees a movement in one of these dark corners. And apparently he just sort of wearily goes, "Is that you, Jones?" And Jones pops forward and goes, "Yeah, it's me."
This is starting to remind me of
Scooby-Doo. Oh,
you know. No. The not Sweeney Todd, the one who escaped from Newgate.
Jack Shepherd. Yes,
who seems incapable of not being caught again.
That's exactly it. As he was taken back to Bow Street, and he's reincarcerated at Tothill for another 3 months, but this time they've upped the ante. They've given him 3 months hard labour. And they've also put forward a thing saying that the only provisions he's allowed is water and gruel. So what they're trying to do is break his spirit. And again, they keep saying, "Why are you there?" And he's like, "I just want to listen in. I want to see Buckingham Palace. I want to listen in." And they say, "How did you get in?" And he just says, "Oh, by a door or by a window," each time. Right. So they have no clue. He's obviously, and this is why I think he must have been many, many times, because he seems to know this place like the back of his hand.
Yeah.
He knows how to get in. He knows where to go, how to escape. He knows how to get to the kitchens. He knows how to get to the Queen's personal apartments. You know, he knows this place probably better than many.
Yeah.
So he's obviously had and you can just imagine this young teenager. I mean, he's small, so he can hide pretty easily. But for a couple of years, just tootling around Buckingham Palace, just whenever you fancy. How amazing. It'll be so cool.
I mean, I guess... For the people who are the staff inside, or the housemaids, or the whatever, you think that you're inside this secure palace.
Yeah.
You're not on the lookout for people hiding behind the curtains or behind the statue or whatever. You're just
and
doing
also,
your thing.
They would
day,
have had
you know.
Chimney sweeps and this sort of thing, and you know, he's probably going to be able to hide in amongst the domestics, because the domestics are the kind of people who are not going to be seen by the upper echelons. You know, they're going to be stoking the fires and laying the beds and all that kind of thing, making sure they're out of sight of everybody. So if they're seeing a little covered boy running around, they're just going to think, oh,
is he still sooty?
Yeah, he never washes, so he's always dirty.
He's all sooty.
He's always dirty.
Yeah.
And so the public really starts loving this story. And there's I always love these diarists who keep these fantastic entries. There's a diarist called Thomas Rakes. And I want to read you a little excerpt from his diary because it's absolutely brilliant. So a little scamp of an apothecary's errand boy named... Oh, actually, I should mention, at the very start, he was... he was sort of doing a bit of work for this before even the first break-in for this apothecary, and he kept saying to him, "Oh, I'm going to break into Buckingham Palace and have a look around." So this guy actually knew that was his plan anyway. So when it comes to court, he's like, "Yeah, he did sort of say he fancied doing that anyway." So it says, "A little scamp of an apothecary's errand boy named Jones has the unaccountable mania of sneaking privately into Buckingham Palace, where he is found secreted at night under a sofa or some other hiding place. No one could divine his object, but twice he's been detected and conveyed to the police office and put into confinement for a time. The other day was detected in a third attempt with apparently as little object. Lady Sandwich wrote that he must undoubtedly be..." Now, this is a real in-joke for the Noahs of London, "a descendant of Inigo Jones, the architect."
Oh.
Hilarious. Inigo. Okay.
Inigo. Inigo. Oh,
Inigo. Inigo Jones. Hey, yes, there is an architect called Inigo Jones. So that's a very nerdy joke, but it's a very good one.
Yes.
An Inigo Jones. Anyway, let's just grind that joke a bit more to pulp. So he's released again. Now, by this point, he's still only like 17, 16, 17. He's still a boy.
Yeah.
He's a bit broken from the hard labour. He's quite frail and quite pale. He's already pretty diminutive, but he apparently looks very small and very cowed now.
Yeah.
And because he's so famous for all these reports and everything, he's actually offered money to go and make appearances at music halls, such as the way of, you know, Victorian London. Yeah. Look at all this fun stuff.
Curiosity.
Exactly. Yeah. But he says no, he declines the offer, and he's not really interested in that. But where he is found is loitering outside Buckingham Palace again.
Uh-huh.
Now, at this point, the government and the royal family are thinking, this is getting quite embarrassing.
Yeah.
Imagine if he comes in again. Like, how can we do that? They're coming for you, Fiona.
They are.
Them.
Yeah.
It's taken a while.
They know where I live.
You've only broken into Buckingham Palace twice, so.
Just the twice.
Nick is stolen every time. Camilla's knickers.
Knickers and an inkwell.
Well, and you missed out. You really did. Anyway.
I'm going to go back for a sword. I've got a sword stashed.
I think you should. That's your vibe, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, the government basically think he's becoming a thorn in our side and we've got to do something. So there's what seems to be, and this is where... A lot of the reports that I was reading, they vary quite a lot with a lot of the details of this. And I think it's a case of it becoming one of those stories that is so fantastical that people, like the details get lost, the mundanity of the details get lost, and also people make it more fantastical and fanciful. Yep. So I'm not 100% sure that the next load of details are pinpoint accurate, but as best I can glean from all the different reports, it seems like some kind of underhand plot was hatched. The government are keen to get rid of him, and somehow somebody, and I just, whether it was the government, the royal family, I don't know, manages to get one of the friends of the Jones family to say, hey, I've got a friend who's a ship's captain. Why don't we send you out with him as an apprentice seaman?
Yeah.
You can go out, you can earn a bit of money, you can get a trade. You know, this seems like a good thing.
You'll be safely on board ship, away from everyone else. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
And it seems like at the mention of money, the boy Jones is like, yeah, cool, all right. I'm not massively bothered about being a sailor, but there's money involved, so let's, you know, let's earn a bit of money. So this captain takes him on board, and it turns out that the ship is actually destined to deport people in New Zealand.
Right, okay.
And the Jones family weren't aware of this. The captain wasn't aware of his famous cargo until he gets on board, and then pretty quickly... Now, bearing in mind, this is a time when you don't really get noticed because you're not on social media or on telly or anything, but he has become so famous that before they've even left England, he has figured out who is on board his ship and he wants none of this.
So he
drops him off in Gravesend because he's leaving England. And it seems like what the captain might have then done is persuaded somebody else to pretend to be Jones so that when they get there, the whole thing has still been, you know, Jones has still been taken
still
to New Zealand.
In New Zealand.
The whole thing only like lasts a couple of weeks after he gets there, and then they realise that he wasn't there.
Right.
So, so Jones is still in England. Now, what I'm then unsure about is whether or not he went voluntarily or was deported to Australia. I can't quite get to the bottom of that. It seems that his brother was already there, so he may have gone voluntarily, but he's settled in Perth. Now, if he is deported, he's not deported as a criminal.
No.
It's more of a, hey, this looks quite fun for you. Why don't you go there? There's your brother. Either way, he's not a criminal. Well, he's not, you know, he's not arrested and sent there, but he does go to Australia.
Yeah.
And the name of this sort of royal stalker follows him. And he's noticed everywhere and he seemingly really hates it. So he's obviously not done it in order to get notoriety.
Yeah.
He's done it literally to look at Buckingham Palace and hear the Queen have a chat.
Yeah.
So he hates all of this. He changes his name in an attempt to escape the notoriety. I mean, not to be fair, not far, only Thomas Jones, but still. And as far as I can tell, he stays in Australia. He doesn't come back. He lived until his 70s. So bear in mind, he would have gone there at the age of, I don't know, let's say 18 or 19, maybe.
Yeah.
There's no, can't really find any fixed facts for that. But he lives over there in Perth, and he becomes the town crier of Perth as well. Rather interestingly.
Very nice, yes.
Rather sadly, he does become, you know, these big...
That sounds like a pillar of respectability, the town crier, surely.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does, doesn't it? I mean, you always want these big fantastical stories to end in a massive flourish that, you know, when he's 80, he returns and sort of goes into the palace and dies in a hail of bullets or something like that. But, you know, often these things are not the case at all. He stays in Australia. He's really sadly, he becomes an alcoholic.
Okay.
But he does live until his 70s and he dies in a place called Bairnsdale in Australia in 1893 on Boxing Day after getting so drunk that he fell off a bridge onto his head and died.
Oh.
Rather sad.
Yes.
You know, if you're going to go in a comedy way, I suppose, but...
Yes. Yeah.
And he was buried in an unmarked grave. And the only thing that was ever erected for him was not that long ago in 2005. There was a plaque memorialising him erected in Australia, but it's incorrect. And I wonder if you can figure out which bit of it was incorrect. I was trying to find the plaque.
Okay. So you said he changed his name to Thomas Jones.
Thomas Jones.
He before?
Edward.
Edward. Oh, yeah. So that's where we started at the beginning.
That is where we started, yes.
Yeah.
So he's not gone very far from that at all.
No.
But, you know, he's still keeping the, you know, keeping the surname alive. But I love it. You know, I want to be known as something different. I'll go for Thomas
Jones.
All right, cool. Thomas. Not far enough.
So it's even more Welsh than Edward.
Yeah, right. So Thomas Jones died after a fall from the Mitchell River Bridge, 26/12/1893, aged 73 years. Transported to Australia in 1840, so possibly transported then, for breaching security at Windsor Castle.
Oh, okay. That's a
plaque erected by the East Gipps Historical Society in 2005. Well, East Gipps Historical Society, you've not done your research, because he never once broke into Windsor Castle, as far as we're aware.
Hmm.
Only ever Buckingham Palace.
It does have fewer windows, Windsor Castle, that you can climb into from the street. I was waiting for you to say that he'd gone in through the drains.
No.
But no indication of that.
He may have done, but not as. He never said as much.
Yeah.
He always said it was just a window or a door.
Yeah. Huh. Unless that's covering his tracks and they were guarding
him. Yeah, but I mean...
But yeah.
I don't know. But I guess, where would you come out if you come in through the drains? Probably clamber out through. I mean,
it's one of those things that's always sort of said about Buckingham Palace is, oh, there's tunnels or there's drains or things that connect up and it's over... You know, there's over one of the rivers, isn't it? So it's sort of...
That's probably the easiest way now, but I reckon at the time, you know, you haven't got much security, tons of windows, hop on it. The first time, he said he snuck in through a gap in the Marble Arch, which used to be at the front of Buckingham Palace before the front was put on. Yeah. So he sort of found his way in that way.
Yeah, so all of this is the slightly older version of Buckingham Palace, isn't it?
Yes, without the big... The U-shape with the...
Still a sort of courtyard in the middle that's open at the front. And then what's now the Marble Arch at the front, kind of.
Yeah. So there we go. That's the story of the Boy Jones. I can't believe you didn't know that one.
I didn't know about the Boy Jones.
Gosh, he's one of my favourites. I often talk about him. And if you go around Buckingham Palace today, especially if you go around the back where the gardens are, you can see this massive high wall. And then there's about two or three different levels of security wire where each time somebody else has managed to break in, they're like, we'll just pop a bit more on, shall we? Now, I wouldn't suggest trying to do that today because there are myriad security things in place. And I think somebody tried to break in a few years back, didn't they? And they were caught within 40 seconds or something, because there are sensors and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, quite soon after that occasion, they, like two or three days later, when they're still on slightly high alert, they found another man in the gardens of Buckingham Palace and they shouted at him and he very reluctantly put his arms up in the air and various things, and that turned out to be Prince Andrew. So he was very cross.
The rest of him anyway.
Yeah.
Gosh. So there we go. So that's the Boy Jones. I just love that little story. Fabulous. I love these people who are just, you know, a bit cheeky and a bit naughty and not harmful, it would seem. Just, you know, out for a bit of fun.
And it's such a random collection of objects, isn't it? A sword that he might go back for, an inkwell and some bloomers.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know.
Just brilliant.
It does seem like just... But actually, what's also lovely about that is, like, whenever actors and people go on Graham Norton chat show and things, and they're chatting away, and they go, oh, I went to Buckingham Palace for dinner, like, very often people will say, did you steal anything?
Yeah.
It's like, something about Buckingham Palace, people this inclination to take a souvenir.
It's usually toilet roll that they take, and you're like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
Not that I'm, of course, condoning stealing things from Buckingham Palace.
No, but it's weird that it has that impulse that, like, you wouldn't go on national TV in any other circumstance and go, oh yeah, I went around to this house and I stole an ashtray.
You probably wouldn't go to your friend's house and steal an ashtray anyway, let's hope not. Although, having said that, there was a queen who was a kleptomaniac, wasn't there, who did used to steal things.
Yes.
Queen Mary, wasn't it?
Mary, yes.
Who'd come round married to George V, who said bugger bogner.
There we go. What a beautifully constructed, apparently come full circle.
She'd come round for dinner in half-inch Aulia's silverware.
Wouldn't she also give it back again? Like, it would find its way back.
Oh, would it?
Wouldn't it? I got the impression as well, she'd occasionally go, oh, what a lovely soap dish. And then you'd have to go, oh, would you like it, Queen Mary? And whoop, off it goes. Maybe.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. So that's...
Well, that's fabulous.
That's my first proper podcast back. All right.
Yes. Welcome back.
Thank you. Most of me. Yeah.
Yes. Great.
Right. Well, next week, or next 2 weeks.
It'll
be you. You, all you.
Me. Right.
So get your thinking caps on. And Gang, if there's anything you want to request,
any requests,
please let us know.
Yeah.
Very happy to take them. Anything to let everyone know before we finish?
I don't think so.
Any walks coming up?
That's a good question. I am doing walks and things. I'm doing tours. I'm just, let me see if I've got any that are...
I haven't got any on the books at the moment just because I can't...
Public ones.
I'm not energetic or fit enough at the moment to do a walking tour.
Yeah.
But so I will keep you in the loop as and when that changes.
If you're super quick, so this is going to go out on the 27th, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct.
So today is the 27th.
Yes.
And tomorrow, on that basis, Thursday afternoon, I am doing the Blitz around the City of London. Or, actually, there's a last couple of Greenwich ones. So in October, on the 6th, on the 20th, I'm doing lovely Greenwich, where we actually start at Tower Hill and we get the boat down to Greenwich, the way the Royals did. And it's a lovely thing. And then there's lots of other good things to do in Greenwich. So you can, I would suggest if you've got time to, you know, stay the afternoon and go inside the things
absolutely
kind of see in the morning. So if you fancy either of those.
And then come for a cup of tea in my house.
Yay, pop back to Alex for a cup of tea. Perfect.
Fabulous.
Finally got tickets to see at the Tate the Yayoi Kusama.
Oh, it's only been a million years.
It's only been a million years. And the last time, the time before I tried to log on, it said you are, you know, 6,085th in the queue to to the website to buy tickets. Whereas this time I left it 2 days after they were released and strolled in straight away. So
fabulous.
Little mirrored rooms at the
And a little notice to everybody that Horizon 22, the new viewing platform, is open. Although I went to try and get tickets the other day and all the pre-sale tickets have sold out. Although they're free, tickets. But still. Did you? Can I come with tickets. You? Do you get one for me?
I did get two. I'd have to, you know, you can wrestle Santa for it.
I'll wrestle Santa for it. And the other thing is...
You might be in Dubai.
Oh, yeah. The other thing is Big Ben is also now open for visits, which it has never been throughout history, but they've just started offering that. So I were going to they release tickets occasionally. I'm going to try and keep an eye on it. And as and when that's happening, I'm going to try and let you know on Instagram. I'll say, you know, go, go, go. But the last time I tried to do it, tried to book the tickets, I went on it, said, oh, slots available here, they're everywhere. Every time you looked, it was sold out. So I think they must just go super quick. So you have to be, you know, as speedy as a rat up a kilt for that one. But
absolutely. The other thing that they are doing in Greenwich at the moment as part of Christopher Wren's 300 year things is they're doing tours up into one of the domes of the neighbourhood. And that's, I don't exciting. Know how kind of well booked up they are, but that again is a space that's never normally open.
Oh, I might have to have a go at that.
Have a look at ONRC.
Yeah.
Website for that. The old Royal Naval College is the place to look up ORNC and have a look at those.
Oink. Well, that's it for this week, gang. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Hopefully, I'll have a voice by then. If not, we have issues.
I'll do most of the talking. That's all right.
But we'll see you then. Have a great couple of weeks.
Enjoy.
Lots of love. Bye.